Let's go. Let's welcome everybody to Planet Pit and some what worldwide music is.
Call me Mr. Worldwide. Listen, nobody call me Mr. Worldwide. Why you think they call me Mr. Worldwide? Listen, nobody call me Mr. Worldwide. Hold up, 'cause bitch, I'm worldwide.
I'm involved in the music business, but the funny thing is, half of these fools don't know music, don't know business, have no business in music. What is this? I learned from the best, stayed away from the worst. Now I send off every verse in a hearse. Now every day's 15th in the first. No more food stamps, turks. These boys can't get past third base. They a bunch of MC searching.
One, two, friends in hell. This is gonna be, I think, the ninth time I will say this, and welcome to Friends in Hell. Unfortunately, this is going to be the last nine episode of the show. Tomorrow, I have one more, and that will be the end of the Friends in Hell podcast show. I want to thank everyone for all the support that you have given us and all the support that we wanted and we got. The guest I have is one of my personal friends. He's one of my dad's friends, too. I won't give him the name, but I call him Uncle Dennis. Uncle Dennis is a good guy, and he's a guy likes film. He's helping me out with a little project. We love talking about James Bond. We love talking about films. We love talking about tools, technology, anything under the sun we talk about. And so, what the hell? It's my show. I'll do whatever I want. So I'm going to have him on. And here he is. All right. Enjoy. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the program. I'm here with my good buddy, Mr. Dennis. Mr. Dennis, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How about yourself?
I've been doing good. We're finally up to episode 9 of the podcast Friends in Hell. It wasn't easy. It took a long time to get to episode 9, but finally we got you here on episode 9.
I appreciate you offering me to be on. Let's see where it goes.
Yeah, we only even had like 4 listeners listening to the whole program in the matter of a whole year.
Okay. You got to give it a shot, though, and try it and see what happens.
Yeah, I started this show 2 years ago, and it was me and a friend, and we were doing only just James Bond stuff. And okay. I did not like the sound quality we were talking to, and so I stopped it, and I did it again with another group of friends. And we called it Friends in Hell because we hated the school at the time, because we had a teacher who was pregnant, and yeah. And she was always yelling at us for no reason, no apparent reason, just be yelling.
That can happen with expectant mothers, I understand.
Yeah, and God, I couldn't stand it, so my friend would say, "Man, this is like hell," and I go, "Yeah, it's like we're friends in hell." Yeah, and so I liked the name, and so I started doing that. And we were talking bad about the teachers on the show, just stuff like, and I liked it was funny, but it wasn't good to put it online, because A, we're still going to that school, so I didn't want to get in trouble. Yeah.
One of the things I understand about this the technology today is never say anything that's being recorded, because it'll be out there forever.
Yeah, or don't post it. And so, it was the last summer. I was getting really bored after my junior year. I was extremely bored, and so I was getting a bit depressed and wondering what could I do. And so, me and one friend, I said, you know what, let's start the podcast, but let's get celebrities. Let's get people we know. Let's get some people there. Okay, I spent a week trying to find people. I'm friends with some professional wrestlers, and they're busy. Crap.
That had to be interesting.
Yeah, I'm friends with Diamond Dallas Page, former professional wrestler.
Do you watch wrestling now in some of the events?
Yeah, I still watch it. I have the network, the World Wrestling Federation network. I still got that, and I think I used to go to live events all the time.
I have my nephews are into it, and they watch it a lot, and I watched one with them, and it was interesting. I got to tell you, I hadn't seen it in a very long time.
It's today's is a little bit more PG. It's more for a small, like a younger audience. When I got into it, it was more the 18 to 32 year old male demographic.
Okay.
And it was more violence. It was more blood.
Nowadays, the audience they're going for, you can't have too much of that stuff.
No, you can't, and it starts getting kind of boring. And but anyways, going back to the story I had, so I found a guy named Kevin Porter, who does some short films online of a Batman short film, and he's called the Underground Batman, because he's the guy that has the physique, has the voice, but he can't get on the big screen. He has to do it online. And he's popular.
Okay.
So I emailed him and I said, I doubt that this guy's going to answer me. In the day, he answered me.
Very good.
I had him on. Mr. Dennis, the show was terrible. It was. I had no outer microphones. My guest and I were fighting. I mean, me and my co-host were arguing in front of the guest because I was trying to tell one question and he was trying to ask another question.
From what I understand, the way these things are done, you have to script everything.
Yeah, but this was our first one, mind you. This was my first one.
You're allowed to make mistakes on the first view.
Yeah, and then I talked to the guy, I apologized to him, but he said, no problem, man, no problem. He actually talked to us in the Batman voice and told me, like, he goes, Kevin, I know you think you haven't done anything yet, but you will be successful. You're very smart. And I'm like, man, that made me feel really good. And so
you can't be hard on yourself. You got to give it you try it, you make mistakes, and you get better each time.
Yeah, and so I started doing another one, but I took my co-host out. I told him, you know what, man, thank you, but I'm going to do a solo thing. So I started talking to some people. Then I started talking to people in the medium that I love, animation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I talked to some writers who wrote for Steven Spielberg's cartoons that he did. Steven Spielberg produced some cartoons, and so
that area has gone through the roof as far as quality, the technological end of it. I mean, they are so good with that stuff nowadays; it's unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm not into the new animation because I'm an animator myself. I use old techniques, meaning we use celluloid paper, which is clear plastic paper.
Right.
And we shoot it on 12s or 1s, I think, frame. And that will take months to do. Unlike nowadays, you will get your tablet and you draw and you see it on the computer and then you animate it. And it takes 3 months instead of a year to animate something.
Yeah, and you don't like going in that direction?
I do, but I think because I'm self-taught and I'm old school. I think I have to learn to get to start using the new techniques, and because the technology is so expensive.
It is, but the way you're doing it has got to be time-wise very expensive, and then you're gonna have to transfer it to the digital format anyway, right? At the end.
Yeah, at the end. Yeah. For animating, I think on the computer, I have to buy the program, which is $600.
Ouch! But once you buy it, you can do anything you want.
Yeah, you have about 4 years to have four. You're basically renting it.
Okay.
And then you can do whatever you want, but you have to have a tablet, which is a it's a computer touchscreen tablet, which is a big monitor that it's only a specification for drawing. That can cost you up to $3,000. So
you know what you might want to consider is okay. You got how much more high school you got?
5 months.
5 months, and then you're going to college?
Yes, sir.
Why don't you consider a school of graphic arts?
That's what I'm doing. I got accepted to Central Piedmont Community College here in Charlotte, which does graphic design.
Outstanding.
Yes, sir. So I'm gonna do that, and one of my dad's cooks, sous chef, said, "Hey, my nephew does graphic design," and he offered me after I graduate that I spend a week with him on the road because he travels to do graphic designs.
Yes.
The man is 24 years old, and gets paid $100,000.
That's not a bad neighborhood to work in.
That's not, and. And we were talking because there are chances that my dad might get another job in Kansas. It was an offer in Kansas. And and what they did is they were actually offering to pay for my tuition.
That's terrific. In fact, I would say definitely, as much as you prefer going old school in a lot of the technology,
I have to go
to learn the new stuff.
Yeah, I have to go new stuff.
You have to learn it and be good at it, and then you can branch out on a tangent and develop it the way you wish.
Yeah, and graphic design is a good career. Go ahead. No, you say first.
I was going to say, just keep on going. Don't let any setbacks slow you down or stop you.
Yeah, thank you. I think sometimes, and I think you find it too, because what you've done before, I think film or anything with film, the genre is kind of dead nowadays.
It is quickly going away. I mean, I look at these things now that they're doing, and the quality is unbelievable. From what I understand, there are still people out there shooting in film, but it's becoming less and less because the digital end of it is, it can do anything.
You know how difficult it was to try to find someone who can develop 8mm film?
Good luck.
It was. I found one, but I had to send it all the way to Ohio.
Yep. That's going away quickly. And it'll probably always be available, but it's going to cost you a fortune.
Yeah.
When I was working. The satellite technology in the imagery was basic. It was good, but it was still very basic, and you could never compete with film.
Mm-hmm.
And then in a matter of 25 years, it surpassed film in its quality.
Yeah.
And film is going away. Look what happened to Kodak.
Yeah, it's gone.
They never saw. They're still in business, but they're not doing anything near what they did in the film and the camera end of it.
And there is one site online which I found that they still sell Kodak film, but it is expensive.
Oh, absolutely! Because even though they printed up a billion feet of it, it's going away quickly.
Yeah,
because
all you have is Super 8.
That's all they can get for Super 8.
You can get from Kodak, or you can get Super 8, which is black and white, which is like 34 or 40 bucks. And then, if you really want to be really technical, you can get called Technicolor, which is $585.
Okay, the first thing is you can that idea and go digital.
Yeah.
You have no choice. And then what you can do there is digitally manipulate it so that it looks like it's old school.
Yeah, and that's what we want. When we talked, I'm going to tell everyone on the show tomorrow what the project is. But when I talked to this particular person, he told me, what I like about it is you're 19 and you're working with something that is way older than you. He goes, that is
absolutely
cool. He goes, that is cool. Try to get the funds for you to do it old school, because I like that technique. I said, okay. But he goes, but if you must have to go digital... And we were doing the me and my co-producer were doing the math and everything else, how much we needed, and so it was, but we did A film and then we did B digital. The B was for digital, we needed $10,000 less than what we needed for film.
Yep.
And
as every year goes by, the film end of it's going to get even more expensive.
Yes, sir. And I said, you know what? I think if we have to, let's do all our things for film. But if we have to, the budget is really low, then we'll go digital. And everyone's like, okay. And
at least you're considering it. I had a friend I met recently was still shooting film, and they ran out of film. They were visiting this area.
Yeah.
And they had to go find a roll of film.
Good luck.
Right. They spent the entire day, and they found, I think, two rolls of film somewhere, and they weren't exactly what she wanted, but she took them because basically that's all she could get.
Yeah.
Consider doing it digitally and then manipulating it as necessary.
Yeah, like my producer told me, or my co-producer told me, he goes, trying to find film in this city is like trying to find a prostitute disease-free.
If and when you did, you wouldn't want it. So, yeah, go digital.
I'm going digital. All right, we're going to talk about something that I think I started to love, and I think you love too. Let's talk about James Bond. I think every single time we see each other, we have to discuss Bond. I think it's just become a normal thing from us. But you saw this in 1962, right? When Dr. No came out?
Actually, when the Bond films started to come out, was it 62?
Yeah, it was 62.
That's when I started seeing them.
Dang, and when it first started, did you enjoy it?
Oh, absolutely. I think one of the first ones was Dr. No.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at it now, and it's I like the style, and I like the characters, and the Bond image is always going to, every time I say, someone says James Bond, the first thing I think of, obviously, is Connery.
Yeah.
But when you watch those old films, you'll see there's almost zero technology in it as far as high-speed chases or anything that could be manipulated to being a spectacular type event.
And there's only one, I'm sorry to cut you off, but there's only one, I think, almost speed chase, but it wasn't really. He's driving an MGB, and you see Connery's face, like, smiling and grinning, but all you see is a blue screen in the back or, like, a fake background of the car.
Exactly, because in those days, the films were all character-driven. They were not event-driven.
Uh-huh.
What I didn't like much in the Bond series was when they got to Roger Moore.
Oh, you didn't like him?
Everything went, well, I didn't mind him as Bond.
Yeah.
Because you have to suspend disbelief as far as the main character goes. What I didn't like about his films was the fact that the technology took over the storyline.
Mm-hmm.
The rocket-powered car, the little jet plane, the skiing down the Alps. It was just totally beyond reasonable belief.
Yeah.
But that was just in every film of that level was doing it. So yeah. You kind of accept it and see where it goes.
I find that it changes technology every year. If you watch 62 to 67 or 69, okay, if you watch the 69, you watch Her Majesty's Secret Service. Okay, yes. Lazenby was the second James Bond. Never became an actor.
Right.
He was an underwear model. And my dad called.
That film was not that bad.
It is rated one of the top 10 best James Bond films in history.
Really?
The director.
Yeah. I thought I was the only one that liked it. I said this is not a bad film. Not great. But not a bad film.
They showed it on Showtime a couple days ago, and I recorded it. And the director, Peter Hunt, he was an editor.
Okay.
He was never a filmmaker.
All right.
So that was his first movie, and then if you watch it, there's a lot of zooms. It does not look like a normal Bond film. It looks like with the film, it looks like it's a Japanese type of vibe. Because you know how the Japanese are, the film is super fast.
Yes.
And when you do a panel or when you do a zoom, it's really fast. That's how it was. And it didn't feel like a Bond. It said Bond, but it felt more like a B-picture film.
Well, now don't forget, the director's background as an editor.
Yeah.
Every time he pictures a scene, he's picturing it as an editor would visualize.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was really well cut, and that movie in America was very good. In Europe, it failed because it wasn't Connery.
Okay, that makes sense.
And my dad went to see that movie.
How did he like it?
He walked out.
Did he really?
Yeah, that's the coolest thing because we talk about it, my dad says, I did not like him. I'm like, why, Dad? I walked out. I'm like, up to what time? Until there's a scene. I'm not sure how long you've seen it, but there's a scene. He's at the beach, and the woman Diana Rigg, who was from the Avengers of a British TV show.
I remember it. That was a great TV show.
I never seen the show. I heard it was pretty good. What's it called? And so he sees her, and then he says, "Good morning. My name is Bond, James Bond." And you see him fight some two, and they always have to be black guys. I don't know why he fights two big black guys. And she drives off in his Aston. She goes to her Mustang and drives off. And Bond says, this never happened to the other fellow. He runs.
Oh, that's fun.
He runs, and then the non-singing Bond intro comes. And that was it. And my dad says, you know what, screw it, and he walked out.
Well, I think the proud part of that is that Connery set the standard. And Broccoli, well, he was the producer.
Broccoli. Him and someone else, Harry Saltzman. They
set the standard, and they put a lot more money into it too.
Mm-hmm. And they had great locations as well. If you remember, in Dr. No, they were in the Bahamas.
That was beautiful down there. So that was the first time I think I'd seen the Bahamas portrayed like that, and it was nice.
Yeah, and then you see my favorite on Master Secret Service. You see that he's in the Swiss Alps, and he's skiing. And I love that. And what I did one time, I think, is I bought I got some ski wear, or just sweaters. Yeah. And I got two golf clubs, and my dad came to visit from work, and I bought the Her Majesty's Secret Service ski theme. And I'm like a fool, just jumping, pretending I'm skiing, and I install the gunshots, so it sounds like I'm skiing and people are shooting at me.
Not bad.
Yeah. And what are your views on the other Bonds of the whole? I think there's six Bonds. What are your views? You don't like the actors.
Brosnan.
Yeah, you like Brosnan.
As far as Pierce Brosnan went, I liked him. He had a little more of the seriousness that Connery had.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a dark side, but not quite. And the problem, I think, with the Brosnan series of films was that they were starting to get a little slicker, too.
Yeah.
Again, the types and taste in film changed, so it had to change also. And the newest one, Daniel Craig?
Yep.
I like him.
He's
got a real dark side to him,
yeah.
And the films have gone back to... Bond was a killer.
Yeah.
He was a state-run hired killer.
Mm-hmm.
And Craig has that ability to portray that.
As we speak right now, they are filming Spectre, which is the new Bond 24.
I understand that's his last one.
He has one more.
Are you having to do one more?
One more. And they have a rumor that Sony wants to have an African-American play James Bond.
Why not? Give it a shot.
Yeah, I find it... I respect that they want to change the continuity to someone, but it would seem a little bit odd. Just because I wouldn't mind it, but it seems a bit odd that you follow 50 years and you change it with that. But did you ever like Timothy Dalton as Bond, even though he only did two movies?
Yes, I did actually. So I caught one of it a while back and I enjoyed it. If I had seen it before, I'd forgotten most of it. But I think he did a fair job. Well, don't forget, I've seen, we're talking 50 years worth of film here.
Yeah.
And 50 years worth of age.
Hey, age is better than beauty, as some say.
And age is better than being dead.
I tell my folks, I've been telling my dad this, I believe I was born 20 to 30 years too late. Because
you would have enjoyed the 60s. They were as far as film and photography, it was incredible.
Because like you just said, right now my era is boring.
Yes.
It is boring because all we don't have back when you have politicians that and you will get angry. Here we get angry, but all we do is tweet. And I really don't care what celebrities are doing. It's like, wow, Kim Kardashian just went to the bathroom. That giant ass, it must have been beautiful. Hashtag beautiful.
Yeah, but you know what I find interesting, in fact, that what you're talking about is fascinating because the technology now with the tweeting and the FaceTime and all the other crap, it has changed governments.
Yeah.
It used to be if a government didn't want you to know something, they would shut down the media.
Uh-huh.
Now they can't shut down the media.
Because it's so strong.
That's right.
But
you'll find it's fascinating. I don't know where it's going to go. It's way above my head as far as even just using it on a daily basis.
Uh-huh.
But it's interesting.
Yeah, I still wish I was at least around for the 60s because I find it, like, today is boring, but it would have so much adventure. Like, my dad tells me stories when he was a lot, when he was like my age in the 60s, and he saw the peace not war. He was surrounded by the hippies. He used to be able to hitchhike.
It was interesting. Times change. Yeah.
Are you familiar with an author called Hunter S. Thompson?
Yes, I have read his work.
Yeah, I got into his work too. I'm reading currently.
He was, now back in the 60s.
Yeah.
He was basically Hunter S. Thompson. How the hell do you explain him?
He was a journalist.
Yeah, he was, but he was also he partook in everything available in the 60s.
Yeah, I know. He
some of it got him in trouble. Some of it was kind of just interesting. Some of his writing is a little bizarre. Mm-hmm. He's probably pretty well fucked up. But that happened a lot back then.
Yeah, I got into Hunter. I'm reading Fear and Loathing on the campaign trail of 1972.
And then there was Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas.
Yeah, there's that one.
And, I can't even remember.
There's Fear and Loathing. There's Fear and Loathing on Campaign Trail, which I'm reading. There's Curse of Lomo and all that stuff.
If you want to read an interesting book from that era, get a copy of Catch 22.
Catch 22.
Yes. Very interesting book. When I was about 17, 18, 19, it was somewhat big.
Yeah.
And worth reading. I don't know if it would still maintain its viability now, but I'd say if you get a copy of it, check it out.
Yeah, I was about to get a book called The Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. Have you heard about that one?
You're bringing up stuff I haven't heard in 50 years.
I'm bringing up stuff that you haven't heard in years because I think that we like in my generation need to know what happened in the past, what cool things were happening.
You have to. If you ignore history, it will definitely repeat itself, and it's a good chance it's going to repeat itself anyway.
Yeah, and no one reads the books or anything of Hunter or the Electric Kool-Aid Acid Test. I am fascinated by it because I'm like, this is what happened at that time, and right now we care about who wins a singing competition. Like if
yes,
like you said, times have changed, but I wish like I told everyone, I love the past. I can't wait for the future. I'm not so excited about today.
Well, yeah, take each day at its own.
Yeah.
So one day at a time, like they used to say. The one thing I find interesting is that back in the 60s, we had high hopes to change a lot. We had high hopes for changing the world. Hmm. You know what? It didn't change a damn thing.
It's still bad. It's still ugly.
There's still a lot of stupid people. They still do a lot of stupid things. There's still governments that don't know what the hell they're doing. So in a way, maybe it's good because it'll teach you a lesson. Mm-hmm. You know, don't expect it to change too much.
And what do you think right now about all what's happening around the world with ISIS currently showing videos about them killing? I think they did last week. The poor Japanese interviewer, they killed one of them.
Yeah, I think if they could be removed from the scene, it wouldn't hurt anybody.
Yeah,
but I don't see them going away.
It took us how long to stop with Al Qaeda, but we're still getting bothered by these people.
They're just the updated version of Al Qaeda.
Yeah, it's like the phones. You just had iPhone 5, repair iPhone 6, and a year later.
Yeah,
but it's
supposed to be a nice toy, and then pretty soon they're coming out with the watch.
Yeah,
who's coming? Somebody's coming out with the watch.
Yeah, Apple's coming out with the watch. I still have my old 5C, which is, what, a year old? But people say, oh, it's old school. And and they released these six, but me being a tech guy, I know is the six, you people put them in their pants, and you know nowadays they have really tight jeans that people put.
Yes.
And the phones were bending.
Oh, I'm sure you can. They're way too big to put in a pocket.
They're soft aluminum, and the normal one is humongous. The plus is the size of a tablet.
Yes.
And
but they're still trying to find the perfect item.
Yeah, even though
they're going to come up with a dozen bad ones before they come up with the right item.
Yes, and then the iWatch will be released, I think, this month or next month. And I think it's cool, but I think I'm a curmudgeon. I love old stuff. I don't like new things. I'm more into the classic stuff. And
okay, well, that makes sense.
Yeah, I just don't. And because that's how my dad is, so I grew up around not listening to new music. I listen more to CCR, Clearance, Clearwater Revival. And
I like their music.
Yeah, I listen to that, or I listen to Beach Boys with my dad, or someone working on the Jaguar, or But yeah, and so I discovered something, and there's people else too. If you invest, okay, the iWatch is great to invest, correct?
Okay.
Because it's greatest technology, the first portable watch for Apple. But instead of spending, $1,000-something for the watch, you could spend that on an old vintage watch, like a Rolex or something, like a really low-budget Rolex. And that will go up in value than your normal watch, your iWatch. Because your iWatch will be popular for 2 years, then the new model will come out.
And then it's going away.
And it's going away. With the other one, it rises up in value for years and years.
But that's the way consumer products are. They'll always be like that. I remember I'll take you back again.
Please.
When black and white TV was the only thing available. First time we go over to a friend at my father's house, and he's got a color TV.
Uh-huh.
The color was, when I think back on it, it was absolutely horrible. The resolution of the TV screen on the screen itself was, I mean, it wouldn't even be acceptable for anything today.
And it was a tube TV,
and
right?
Controller. Huh?
It was a tube TV? What was it, like a full round TV?
In those days, that's all they had was tube TVs.
Yeah.
And the controller that he had had an off-on button,
uh-huh,
and a channel button.
Yeah.
And there may have been volume, but there probably was volume, but I don't remember it being there. So we went from a three-button controller to, I was just looking at the one I have here, I must have 50 buttons on this damn thing, and I have no idea what they are. So and the quality. Look at the quality on this stuff.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. So what you do is you spend the money on technology that you think you might like, but to get into a contest where you're buying a new phone every 6 months or a year, that's nice if you got the money.
Yeah, like for me, because I'm in this generation, I love technology, but I bought myself an iMac, right? My dad helped me get one, and it was 2008. It was a 2008 model. 2 gigabytes, and it was slow, but it was an Apple computer. I make my dad spend the money and buy himself a laptop.
Okay.
He hated me so much because he needed the computer, but he was still using a laptop from 2002. And it wasn't.
He was using a laptop in 2002.
No, from 2002. It was from 2002, okay. And that computer was so slow, like very slow. And I said, Dad, let's go to the Apple store and find a computer. Okay, $1,000 later, he buys one.
Yeah, that's what they cost, and that's what you're paying for the technology.
Yeah. Anyway, he buys one. Okay, and then I see the desktop. It's thinner than what I have. Mine was about a good 5 inches thick. This one was about an inch thick, the computer. And I was falling in love with it, and I look at the price, $1,200.
Yep.
I cringe, and then my dad says, why don't you sell yours? No, I like mine. It took a lot of sacrifice to buy that. Okay. And it turns out that I said, okay, it was my birthday. And you came to my birthday party. And I think you remember. And all I got was cards, but I opened it. It had money in it. Well, yippee. And someone came, one of my desk cooks came and gave me $200. Wow. Nice. I'm like, wow. So I had about good $300. And then I sell the computer. And I was about to sell the price I wanted, but I'm talking to this guy, and this guy acts like he knows everything. Oh, I know this, I know that. Okay, no problem. How much you want for it? $685. Deal. That was quadruple how much I paid for it. Because the guy was he wouldn't let me tell him the price, so I thought he wouldn't agree with me, and turns out that he did. He overpaid for the dang thing, but. I got the computer, and now with this technology, I've been able to record the podcast Friends in Hell with it, because I don't have to spend money on buying the radio machine. I don't have to buy the recording machine. I don't even have to buy a microphone. I have it built in the computer.
Like I say, you can't beat the technology in every aspect that we use it, from automobiles to audio,
yeah,
to visual. It has gotten so good, it's unbelievable.
I have a question, because you were in the early days of, you were around the 60s, 70s, and 80s. When you see what we have today and you saw the first things, were you always shocked to see them?
No, because I've always... They're always inventing something better.
Like the creation of the cell phone. Were you shocked when it was originally a brick? It was a big behemoth with a big antenna.
I remember using them. I never owned one in those days because it was just way out of my price range.
Yeah.
But I had friends who had them.
Yeah.
And it was a kick in the ass to use. I rented a car one time that had a car phone.
Yeah.
And it took up the entire. You know the console between the two front seats nowadays? You got a storage area.
The Jaguar has a phone.
It has a phone. I was going to say,
yeah.
It fills up the entire storage area with just the telephone.
But
it was such a kick in the ass to use.
Yeah.
That it was incredible. It was just, you know, the newest thing, and the technology was there.
And then they come smaller. And then they're still blocky, and then they go smaller, and they go smaller, and now, by God, they become touchscreen.
Oh, it's, you can do anything on those little phones now that you could do in the old days on a computer.
Yes.
And even then, you can do that.
You can even have Office on your phone, Microsoft Office, Microsoft Outlook. I made a 30-minute film with just recording on my phone, and the editing software and everything.
That's right, and I think it's absolutely fascinating. When I was, years ago, when I was working, digital photography was just, I mean, it was way brand new.
Uh-huh.
They were, the outfit I was with bought a couple of Kodak single-lens reflex digital cameras.
Yes.
I think they were about maybe 10 or 11 megapixels,
mm-hmm.
and it was about $12,000 each.
Wow.
But they were absolutely gorgeous.
Uh-huh.
And I looked at that, and I said, well, we'll see where this goes. And it look where it went.
Shocking, huh?
The damn telephone. Your telephone takes a better picture than that camera could have. And that was an Nikon.
Yes. And now, heck, I even thought that pens, just pens you write in, have been way better.
Yep.
Yeah, because I would... someone gave me a gift card to Staples, and I bought me a Fisher Space Pen, right?
Yeah.
Those pens were meant to write in space and everything. And I say, okay, what's the difference between my normal pen, which is a $2 pen, compared to a pen that's $25? Oh, well, it has pressure, so the ink will go faster, the ink will go smoother. I find it's the same thing with a different package.
I was going to say, don't spend the $25. Go buy yourself 100 or two regular pens because they work the same.
Yeah, you know. Yeah.
They put word on paper, and that's what they're for.
That's it. I will probably pay $25 if the pen will write for me.
There you go.
If it writes, I wonder how we'll do that. But if it writes, it would be a great idea. But I'm going to say one thing I forgot to tell you. Is, you know, I go to a comic book conventions every year to invest on comics and everything. And one year I was going to dress as Hunter S. Thompson, right?
Right.
And my dad did not know who Hunter was. He goes, "Who's Hunter? Who's Hunter?" And I told him everything. My dad says, "You're gonna be a drug addict." And mind you, my dad's always working, so he doesn't read much because he's putting 18 hours into his job. And I said, no, I'm gonna be Hunter. And what I did is I dressed as Hunter, went to his convention. Some guy in front of me was Hunter, and he got stopped by security because he was. And what I did is I took the hat, the glasses, and I made a cigarette out of a pen. And the holder, and I took it out and I put it in my book bag, and I had the Hawaiian shirt that he wears, but I had a superhero shirt underneath, and took the superhero shirt took the Hawaiian shirt off, put it in my bag, and I was normal Kevin.
Perfect.
So I didn't want to
fit the image. They'll treat you the way they think you are.
Yeah, and I took it off and everything.
Hunter S. Thompson was a drug addict.
He was. He would take so much drugs.
He was mostly an alcoholic, but he was still, he indulged a little more than perhaps he should have.
No, he actually, there is, online, you can see his schedule of what he did, and yeah. I will pull it up right now. The man passed away in 2005. He shot himself.
Yep.
And, all right, I'm going to tell you the schedule of what Hunter had for one day. Okay. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, he will wake up. At 3:05 in the afternoon, he will have Chivas Regal with the morning paper, a Dunhill cigarette. At 3:45 in the afternoon, he have cocaine. At 3:50, another glass of Chivas and the Dunhill. At 4:05, he will have his first cup of coffee and a Dunhill.
Okay.
4:15 cocaine, 4:25 orange juice and Dunhill.
Right.
4:30 to 5:05 who have cocaine.
Okay.
5:11 coffee and another Dunhill. At 5:30 he will have more. He will have ice cream. And with Chivas, shocking enough, at 4:45 he have more cocaine. At 6 p.m., he will have grass just to take off the edge.
Right. Well, by then, he's going to need... Right, I was going to say, he's pretty wired by this time. He needs a joint.
At 7:05, he will go to his favorite bar, the Woody Creek Tavern.
Yeah.
For lunch, he will have a Heineken, two margaritas, two cheeseburgers, two order of fries, a plate of tomatoes, coleslaw, taco salad, a double order of onion rings, carrot cake, ice cream, bean fritters, Dunhill, another Heineken, and cocaine.
See, now that's surprising because if he's doing that much coke, he's really not eating a lot because you don't want to eat a whole lot when you're doing coke.
Yeah, and he says...
What you want to do is drink a lot.
Yeah.
And a few other things, but you really don't want to eat.
And it says here, and for the ride home, a snow cone and a glass of shredded ice... over which is poured 3 or 4 ounces of Chivas.
Yeah, Chivas was an excellent whiskey. It was a scotch.
Oh, really?
Excellent scotch.
At 9 o'clock, cocaine. 10 o'clock, drops acid.
Okay.
11
o'clock. At least he waited until he was back inside.
Yeah, and then 11 o'clock, he will have cocaine and grass. 11:30, cocaine. And at midnight, Hunter will start writing.
Well, he's going to be up for a while. He's doing a lot of coke.
Yeah, and then
he's not going to sleep for a few days.
Yeah.
So he might as well do something.
And then from midnight to 6 a.m., he is still riding, having chartreuse, cocaine, grass, Chivas, coffee, Heineken, clove, cigarettes, grapefruits, because he would have grapefruit and then pour whiskey all over his grapefruit.
Yeah. Like I said, he was an addict, but he had a particular choice of what he indulged in.
And then at 8:20, he will sleep.
Yep. Eventually, you fall asleep.
Yeah, and Hunter, I would I started seeing his documentaries, and it's funny because me and my friends, we know about Hunter, and we just say, man, imagine how it was meeting him in his prime and all that stuff. And you see, there's videos online. Check it out, that he's driving, and he.
Oh yeah, no, he. if and when you met this guy, he was probably fucked up all the time.
Yeah, but he was a great writer.
Yeah. At the time, he had some interesting things to say. Good observations, interesting take on the subjects. So yeah, he was good.
Very good. And one more, let's talk about one more thing, and then we're going to cut you off, sir, because I know you have better things to do than being on this program. But
that's all right. When we're done, we're done.
Yeah, when we're done, we're done. Because I don't want to push you. What I do to the guests is we talk until we don't have anything more to talk to. And I don't want you to feel like I won't leave you alone. But when you
don't.
Yes, sir.
Kevin, I'm here because I want to give you a hand and I like talking with you.
Thank you,
so
sir.
My subjects, you're a rookie in the world now.
Thank you.
A long road ahead of you. So keep an eye on history because it'll give you a lot of insight into what was going on.
Yeah.
And don't do coke. Or acid. Or, occasionally a shiv isn't bad, but they don't even, not many people drink that anymore.
Yeah, I think now some of the because I watch some old shows, and I think that some of the things are really gone. Like in my opinion, I watch on YouTube. You can see a show. I think you may have seen it or not, called Playboy's Playpen or Playboy's Penthouse.
Yes, that was an old TV show.
Yeah, it was Hugh Hefner's show.
Yeah, that was an excellent show because at the time, back in the 60s, if you paid attention to things like that, his TV show had some of the best musicians, some of the best comedians, and it was just, you know, smart, intelligent, well-off people having a nice time.
Yeah, and it was classy. It wasn't it was more. It wasn't as I would call it hipster-esque at the time. In the 60s in England was crazy. Everything was paint dropped. In America, I find it was more upper class.
Well, it was different.
Yeah,
it was a fun time.
Yeah, and plus Hugh Hefner at least was still young.
He was very young when he started the magazine.
Yeah, and we're not now. Yours truly has become a reader of the magazine.
I always enjoyed his magazine because one, the women are absolutely gorgeous.
Yes, and the articles are really good.
Right, some of the authors he had.
Yeah.
Were the best of the best of the time, and they're still the best because their insights and their storylines and their imagination was unbelievable.
Yeah.
In fact, you know a movie called what the hell was the name of it? About the kid that wanted a BB gun for Christmas.
Oh, yes, A Christmas Story or something like that.
A Christmas Story, I think. Yes.
Yes.
That's the name of it. I read that first in Playboy.
Uh huh.
Long before it was popular.
Yeah.
And long before they made it a film. And it was written by Shel Silverstein, who worked for Playboy.
Yes, and Silverstein was brilliant.
Yes. So everybody who says, you know, it's just a skin magazine, et cetera, et cetera. No, it wasn't. Hefner did some really good things on the social scene. He was ahead of himself as far as the publishing of the stories.
Yes.
And I think his magazine probably would have been a success if he even kept out the girls, but they sure as hell didn't hurt.
Yeah, I became a new reader once. My dad said, "You know what? You're old enough to know. Here you go." And he gives me a stack of the books, and it was like finally, like a beam of light came, and the angels were singing and all that stuff. And
Those women will do that to you. But yeah. The stories are also
And I was reading it. I was reading it, and because of course when you're a little younger and stuff, you don't really see the stories. You see more of the girls, and
right.
I'm reading it, and I'm like, this. I have learned more about how to smoke a cigar by Arnold Schwarzenegger. I have learned about meat. I've learned about cologne. I've learned how it, like, to open the door for a woman. If you care about this woman, you'd walk around the car. If you don't care about her, you walk in front of the car.
Knowing all those things is good.
Yeah.
What it's teaching, I think one of the things Playboy taught was a sense of style.
Very.
You can be a gentleman and not be the way people view some of that now. You can have class. You can have style. You can be knowledgeable about a variety of subjects. And that makes you a more rounded individual. I think that's important.
And you started reading it when it started to become brand new, right?
Say again?
You read the books when you read the magazine when it was almost pretty much brand new.
Oh, absolutely. I remember the first one, the Marilyn Monroe shot.
You had that one?
Absolutely terrific. Do I have it?
No, did you had that one originally, right? Did you buy it off the newsstands?
Probably, or I saw it might be, for more than likely, my father bought it and I read his.
Yeah, because you know how much that book is worth right now.
I don't even want to think about it. The same thing you were talking about comic books. I had all those things when I was a kid. If they weren't brand new, they were so early in the production cycle that they'd be a fortune today.
Yeah, they...
Along with baseball cards and toys. So these are things that you go through. Some you save, most you don't.
I started becoming a... People tell me that I'm really smart for doing this. Is I bought old comic books. And I think you've seen them. I bought books from 1939 to 1965. And
collection.
Yes, very good. I don't have thousands of them. I have about 10 or 20. And
that's all you need. Just buy, you know, if you see, you come across a good one and it's worth the money, you buy it because they're not going to print it again.
No, and sometimes they rip you, they try to rip you off.
Yeah, absolutely. Everybody thinks it's worth $50 million now.
Yeah, I went to this show and this guy had books and I said, hey, do you have any Golden Age books? That's what we call them. That's what we call them, Golden Age, because they're old. And he goes, yeah, but they're $3,000 to $4,000. I said, yeah, I have the money. Let me see the books.
Right. And
at first I didn't like the guy because he told me, yeah, they're expensive. I said, let me see the books. I look at him. He had them way overpriced. And if you're smart, you have them graded, meaning you send them to a third party.
Right.
And they grade them for you each corner and they give you percentage.
Right.
I do not buy them graded because I spend more money if it's graded, and I can send them off to be graded myself, and I can make another profit.
Right. What you have to do is be knowledgeable enough about the subject to think, okay, in about 5 years, this is going to be something that might be worth a lot more than what I'm paying for it.
And I did a great investment because I bought the Action Comics number 31, which is Superman's first appearance in Europe. This is during World War II.
Right.
So he's in Europe going to fight a Nazi, and you see a European building, a European castle.
Yeah.
Now I said, okay, one of these days it's going to go up because there's going to be a film. Well, next year Batman and Superman will be releasing. I bought it because of that. I bought last
right.
2 years ago. I bought as well Detective 41, which is Robin was, I think, 6 months old.
I had an opportunity to... I look back occasionally at, you know, things I should have done. You spend a lot of sometimes doing that when you get old.
Yeah.
Two things I missed out on that I knew were going to be big.
Yeah.
One was Seiko watches.
Yes.
When I was in Japan in 68, 69...
Yeah.
They were big there.
Mm-hmm.
The variety and what they had was unbelievable compared to what was available here.
Because it was quartz.
And they were like 35 to 50, 75 bucks a piece.
Yeah.
I said, oh, man, if you could bring a couple of thousand of these into the States, they'd sell like hotcakes.
Uh-huh.
Well, naturally, being a GI, I said, well, the hell with it. I'd rather go get drunk and pick up a hooker. So, and then the other was Honda cars.
Yeah.
Over in those days, they had a sports car I forgot what the hell the name of it was, but it was a little two-seater, mm-hmm. absolutely gorgeous. And I said, man, this thing, it was about the same size as an MGB.
Uh-huh.
I said, if this thing could get into the States, you could make a fortune.
Yeah.
Again, I said, the hell with it, let's go get drunk. But look at today. Whoever saw it finally and took advantage of it and had the money to you do it, outstanding. Good for them.
Yeah.
So you're going to run across these things, and when you think it's worth it, take it.
Yeah, and what I do is I trade. If I can't afford it, I say, hey, I got this book. I'll give you this much and the book, or we'll do even trade. Or that's what you have to do, because some people, these guys are, 40, 50 years old? And they're balding, and they don't want to deal with someone who's young. So yeah, so I look them in the eyes. I'm like, hey.
So you're viewing it correctly.
Yeah.
You look at it as it's going to be down the line.
Uh huh.
And who knows? Someday you're bound to run into something really worthwhile. And you'd be surprised at how much you get for it.
Yeah, and I evaluate my collection. And there's a book called comic book. It's like, I think it's the Overstreet Price Guide, meaning they tell you how much the books are. Well, I did not spend on the good books I have. I did not spend a dime. I traded my books.
Excellent.
And they are, I would like to say, over the $10,000 limit, over the $10,000 limit. And we
very good. Hang on to them, because now you got to realize also. You rarely get what you think you're going to get.
Yeah.
But you'll get more than you probably anticipate.
Yes, and I almost had an opportunity to buy the first appearance of Batman.
Oh.
Yes, I'll tell you the story. We going to a convention, and we go to a big convention. Hey, if you're free whenever you want to come by to a convention, let me know. Well, you'll have fun with us. And this guy had the first appearance of Batman. He wanted $100,000.
Oh, man.
Which is not a bad price for that book. Yes, it's expensive. Really? It's $100,000, but now it's $1.2 million.
Oh, outstanding. Now, what you got to do is, like I said, look to the future and say, what do I have? What should I buy if I see it?
Yeah.
That in 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, I'll return it. I'll get a nice return on it.
Yeah, and then, but some people, like I said, overpriced, but this guy had a great price. And I called my dad. Because when I come to, when I go to the conventions, all I carry is $120 with me. That is nothing for a convention, because I bring my comics in my backpack, and I talk to the people, and I pretty much spend the whole day there with a friend of mine. And I called my dad. I said, Dad, this guy had the first appearance of Batman. He goes, oh, really? How much? $100,000. He goes, offer him 50. 50 what? 1,000. If he says yes, we'll get it. I said, you're joking. He goes, no.
Did you offer it to him?
Yeah, I did. I'll tell you how. We talked to him. I talked to him. I said, okay, how much you want for it? He goes, 100,000. I said, I can't do 100,000. He goes, how much will you do? I'll give you 30. And the guy says, no, I won't take it. I said, come on, 30. Right now, I'll go to the bank, and I'll get the money, and you'll be happy. He goes, no, I can't do it. I said, okay. And I walked around for a couple hours, and I came back. I said, okay, I'll give you another offer. What? 40. I can't do 40. I said, you come on, man. It's who's gonna spend that much money for a book? He goes, there's a lot of investors. I mean, how long have you had that book? 3 years, and you're still trying to sell it? Sell it to a guy like me who will take care of it, who will take it to a good home, and who will treat it with respect. Instead of having it in storage. Well, let me think about it. All right. I walked around, and the guys did not even, the guy was like saying, not thinking. I said, okay, one more chance. He goes, what? I'll give you 50. 50,000. And he goes, okay, let me talk to my wife. Of course, he had to go talk to his wife.
Right.
And he said, give me 55. I said, I can't do 55. I can do 55. And he goes, what can you do? I can do 50. Shake my hand right now. Shake my hand. And he goes, it is a great offer, but I won't be able to. Let me give me your number, and I'll give you a call. He never called me.
Well, he's still now. He's still sitting on it. The thing, you made him a very reasonable offer.
Yeah.
Had he needed the money for some reason,
he would have sold it.
Got it.
Yeah.
Right. But as it is, he's probably sitting on it, thinking, well, I know I can get 50 for it. Let me sit on it a little longer, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, and it was in really small grade as well.
You approached it properly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say, keep doing it that way. Eventually, you'll find somebody else that wants the money, and you'll get a good deal on something.
Yeah, and I told him, come on, sell it to a guy like me who's going to treat with respect, and who's going to treasure it, and who's going to take care of it, and who's going to put it in a vault. And instead of having it passed by hundreds of people saying, oh my God, look at the book, and just walk away. And he was thinking about it and thinking about it. And I said, you know what? Thank you. And I shook his hand and I said, and I walked away. And then that's all. And I told my dad, and my dad said, you should call me more. I said, no, it's not. It's nice, but it's not worth it to spend that much money on the book that I know that I will sell it. But just because the guy probably got it in the collection that he found. And right. So he's probably going to make 100% profit on me. And so...
Well, you got it. And he didn't need the money at that point.
Yeah, he didn't need it. So I said that's wise. And then this year, 2014, was 75 years of Batman. Okay?
Right.
It was very expensive, all Batman stuff. $180 for a statue that will cost $90. The books, terrible books. Like, they were not attractive. They were not beautiful books that I like. Because I buy very low quality books. The books that are 1.2 or 2.5. Just because they're affordable to get.
Yes.
And I said, okay. I know that the television series The Flash will be released about a month after this convention. So what I did is I bought everything Flash.
Okay.
I bought comic books from The Flash. I think you know who The Flash is. I bought I bought statues of The Flash, figurines of The Flash. Total, I spent $100, and I sold one, and I made which I bought one thing which was $50, and I sold it for $120.
See, that's a nice return.
Because of the show.
Yep, that's exactly right.
So the show.
So you're doing this properly. Keep your eyes open, buy low and sell high.
And plus, I'm investing. I think it's smart to invest. There are people who, like, in 2000 invested on silver when silver was really low.
Yeah.
And now this guy made like 100,000 something on silver that to invest. And my dad told me, just invest. Invest on things that you know. And so that's what I've been doing, just investing. And like right now, we have a big investment in the garage, as you know, the Jaguar, because we're still fixing on it. But because you were in the era of the muscle car, and because of the era of the new Euro cars, what are your views right now on cars today?
Oh, I think they're. Truthfully, I love every new technological thing they put in these cars.
Yeah.
When I grew up, seatbelts weren't even in the cars yet.
Really?
Yeah, there were no seatbelts.
Wow.
I saw one with a seat. They started to come in after I got my license. They started to be required, and more cars had them.
Uh-huh.
But they weren't there. Headrests.
Yes.
On the back of the seats. They did away with the solid stainless steel steering columns.
Uh-huh.
The steering wheels were dangerous. I mean, there's so many changes they've made to keep you alive in these things. And the handling. All those cars that I grew up with, absolutely spectacular and unbelievably fast in a straight line.
Yes.
The minute you try to turn the damn things, you flip it. they were not road cars. They were straight muscle cars, literally.
Mm-hmm.
But I like all the new technology. It's unbelievable.
Have you seen the new BMWs they released, the i3 and
no,
the i8? Okay. It has no motor.
It has no, what do they drive it with?
Batteries. It's a battery-powered car.
It's all battery, so they're going electric all the way?
Yes. There's two models, which is electric, which is it's a small little BMW, which is about the size of a smart car and half of another smart car.
Okay.
And it's a real nice car. And the grill is no longer the metal grill. It's just a plastic insert. Just to see it, right. Just to act like it has a grill. And then they came out with the i8, which is a sporty car, which looks like a BMW M1.
Okay, yeah.
And it's a beautiful car. You can get the i3 for $30,000, and the i8 for $100,000.
There you go.
And
that's a nice neighborhood.
Yeah, those are nice cars. And then, but you find that some of them are really identical.
Oh, they're all very similar nowadays. I mean, that's unavoidable.
Yeah, for example, someone says, which car would you rather have? Would you rather drive a DeLorean, or would you rather just drive a new normal car? I said, I would rather have a DeLorean. They go, why? Because of the movie? No, because it is stainless steel. It is shaped weirdly. It has a motor in the back. The guy was selling cocaine, going back to cocaine. and then...
It was very popular in those days.
And then we made the car for 2 years.
Right, you're buying a piece of history, basically.
Yeah, and it is a pretty nice car.
Now, if you're looking for transportation,
yeah,
just transportation, you can't beat the new ones.
You cannot, because it's safety.
They run well. Huh?
They're very safe.
They're very safe. You got airbags all over the place.
Yeah.
So I like all the new technology, because the older I get, the worse I become as a driver, and I want all the safety I can get.
Nah, you're not that bad. Well, Mr. Dennis, we had, I think hopefully we had some fun. I'm sure I did.
I hope it was enjoyable.
Yeah, we are. Don't worry. Some of the things are going to get edited out, and we are probably going to end the program right now. Please stay online. All right. Okay. Friends in Hell will continue tomorrow on its last episode. Goodbye. Well, that's the end of the program, folks. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Hopefully, I had fun with Uncle Dennis or Mr. Dennis. We've been talking a lot about old stuff, and I think I'm a curmudgeon because I know a lot of really old things, like books, the electric Kool-Aid acid test. I know about that. He hasn't heard it in 50 years. We know about swatches. We know about Hondas. We know about Thompson. We know about the Playboy's penthouse, even though that show hasn't been on since 1961. So I feel like I can relate to him, and because we talk pretty well together, and because he remembers the old stuff. I love the old stuff, and I'm amazed that he has been through that time. Then anyway, this is episode 9. Tomorrow I will have John P. McCann back from episode 4, who writer Freakazoid. We'll talk about everything else and Freakazoid. Yeah, this is almost the last episode. But anyway, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please go to Facebook, Friends in Hell. Also, listen to us on Podomatic.com. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you later. Listen to us all the time. Friends in Hell is the only place you will be, because that's the only place you will hear us in hell. Goodbye. It's the worldwide. Cause bitch, I'm worldwide. Let somebody call me Mr. Worldwide. Why you think they call me Mr. Worldwide? Let somebody call me Mr. Worldwide. Hold up. Cause bitch, I'm worldwide.